Welcome to A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life. This is the place to be for stories to inspire and uplift when life doesn't go according to our plans. I'm Laura Muirhead, your host and the reigning queen of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life. I can't wait to share the plot twist stories of my guests that will inspire and uplift you when life didn't follow the plan, right here on A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life podcast.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life. I am so happy and honored to have Carol Lee joining us today. Carol and I have known each other in the online world for a couple of years, and I have personally worked with Carol in her kinesiology sessions and workshops that she has held for me in my studio. So, welcome, Carol, and come and introduce yourself and tell us what you do and where you are and how you light the world up.
Oh, thank you, Laura, and thank you so much for having me on your lovely podcast. My name's Carol, and as you can probably hear, I'm in the United Kingdom. I live in the southwest of the United Kingdom, a county called Devon, which I love very much. It's a beautiful rural county. We have coasts both sides and moors in the middle. So it's, as I said, very rural, very nature focused. And I live here. I live here with my partner. My boys are grown up. I have a cat called Stevie and I have six hens. So they're very special to me. And my work is always hard to explain. I suppose I would call myself somebody who helps people transform their life in some way. And I would do that in different ways. So I'm very energetically focused, if you like, in that I'm always looking at how we can transform our energy. I work with a lot of people who want to give up sugar. I myself, maybe we'll talk about this a bit more later, I'm a recovering sugar addict, and I haven't eaten sugar for the last 4.5 years. And that's really transformed my life. So that was one thing that happened on the way to my life. And I use lots of tools when I work with people. I'm a kinesiologist. I work with a pendulum. I'm a naturopathic nutritional therapist. So I'm also very into food and nutrition, but not just the vitamins and minerals, more about the energy of the food and how we can work with the seasons, how we can work with the moon phases to create that transformation. So I've got lots of different threads that I bring together in my work. So I don't know if that sums it up in any useful way, but
I love it. I love this. But in terms of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life, you probably didn't start out as a 5-year-old, you know, little girl saying, this is what I want to do. I want to do all these things and I want to have sugar freedom and I want to work with food energy and I want to help people transform their energies. So tell us some of your A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life experiences that led you to where you are today.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Well, I think when I was asked at school, what did I want to do? I think I always said I want to help people, you know, and I knew I didn't want to do something like nursing because blood makes me, you know, an illness makes me. So I sort of settled on a career in social work. So my first training, if you like, from 18 to 22 at university, I trained as a social worker, and actually I worked as a social worker for 18 years. And so a long time I worked as a social worker. Now, a lot of that time I was also transitioning into seeing the world in different ways. But, you know, a large part of me actually enjoyed. I liked working with people. I liked supporting them to make changes in their life. But I think I got to the point where I realized that what I was doing is just sort of putting a plaster on a gaping wound, that actually the healing that needed to happen, the transformation that needed to happen, was actually on a much deeper level. And then, as it happened, a very good friend of mine, so I don't know how many years this was into my social work career, maybe 5 years, a friend of mine started having acupuncture. And I was sort of really interested in this. I was sort of, wow. And I think the thing that I remember so clearly is, We did our social work training together. We worked in the same office, and, you know, we used to sort of go in on the train together and wring our hands and talk about boys and life and stress. And we used to sort of have this sort of, oh, life. And then she had acupuncture, and all of a sudden she changed. And I thought, wow, this is really interesting. You know, because I didn't, all I knew about it is you stuck needles in. I didn't really know anything about it. But I thought, wow, she, you know, and she talked to me a bit about it and how, you know, the theory was linked to nature and how different she felt and how calm she felt afterwards. And I thought, I'm going to have some of that, because I need some of that. Because, you know, I was in my 20s, I had lots of angst stuff. I had lots of stuff that were going in my head about growing up and all that sort of stuff. So I started having acupuncture myself, and it was like, that was my very first experience of energy medicine, if you like. That was my very, and it has, that thread of my life has paved the way, if you like, for everything I do now. So I started off having acupuncture. I was like, wow, this is amazing. How can someone stick a needle in my big toe and my periods are better? Or how can people, you know, somebody stick a needle in my arm and I feel less vulnerable in relationships? It was like, it sort of blew my brain a bit. So I was like, I need to know how to do this. So pretty soon I decided, okay, I am going to become an acupuncturist. I'm going to do that. And so I did. I trained. I did the four-year training. And it was a part-time training, so I was still working as a social worker. And I, yeah, learned all about energy. I learned about meridians. I learned about acupuncture points. I learned the underlying theory around traditional Chinese medicine about how whatever's happening in nature is also happening within us. And, you know, my life changed. And I think before that moment, I'd been a bit of a seeker. You know, I'd been thinking about my spirituality. Did I want to go to church? It didn't really sit right. Did I want to try this? Did I want to go to a spiritualist church? Again, didn't quite sit right. But for some reason, this beautiful philosophy of us being completely connected to the natural world and how, you know, how the seasons affect our energy, it just completely sang to me. And it was that experience, if you like, that continues to be the main thread of how I see the world and my spiritual life, if you like. I mean, you know, I've moved on in terms of, I probably haven't wielded an acupuncture needle for, I don't know, 15 years maybe. But in my other work, I use acupuncture points all the time. I use the energy meridians. I talk about seasonal work and living with the seasons. It basically became a backdrop for my whole life, if that makes sense. It's the lens I look through when I think about everything. So
I love that. It seems like to me, it's kind of the base level, the platform,
yeah,
like
totally.
your foundation that you yeah. then built other things on. Or as I love what you're saying, as far as pulling the thread and weaving your life's cloth in. So, okay. So here you are, you've learned acupuncture.
Yeah.
And all the good things that go along with that. And I also love this. I love that you use the seasons because, well, two things. I had acupuncture several years ago. I was going to have back surgery and they were all for me. Like you have like literally the MRI shows all these issues in your back and you have to have back surgery. And it actually was my husband, surprisingly enough, who's not really into the alternative stuff, especially back then, who said, maybe there's somebody else who could help you, you know? And I literally had a little Google and, found an acupuncturist in our area who, I mean, it wasn't just a magical overnight thing. It was work, but she's also a functional doctor who was for the first time gave me books to read on what was going on instead of just like, I'll fix you. No, you need to know how to fix yourself. And I literally had to do these exercises and I worked with her for probably 2 years. And it wasn't only with the acupuncture, it was also with food and diet and other things. But so I love this. And I love that you learned these things. But also the other thing that has come up for me in the last couple of years is the seasons. Because here, you know, I live in the Northern Hemisphere in North America, and we have four seasons. Probably more six or seven, but four solid seasons, right? And I hear people, especially in the winter, complain that it's cold and snowy. And a few years ago, I was like, well, wait a minute. You're complaining because you're inconvenienced by the earth that you live on? Like by the nature, by the natural things that happen that, by the way, you knew were coming for the last, you know, 9 months, you knew this was going to show up. So I've learned like you to not to the level that you work with it, but to appreciate the different seasons and notice the differences in my body where I tend to slow down in the winter and I want to maybe hibernate a little bit in the winter. And so I love that you brought this up. And I think it's so interesting. And to work on the level that you work with it. So anyway, so after you've had that foundation, then where did you go from there?
Well, I had a spell of doing part-time. So part-time social work, part-time acupuncturist. So I did them. I've always been very fluid with my work. I wouldn't see myself as a risk taker. But I look back and I just thought, well, that's what I want to do. I'm just going to do it. I can live on half the salary. You know, I don't need much. This is more important to me to do the work I love. So for a long time, I worked half and half. And then I was married at that point and I was living in the Midlands to start with. And then we moved back to Devon where me and my husband both grew up. And I can't remember at what point I've always been into food. I've always been into nutrition. I've always been into health. And I started to think much more about food and what I was eating. My husband was a real foodie, really into good quality foods. And then we had the boys. And I think that sort of made more solid my interest in wanting to understand about food because I wanted to give them good food. And remarkably, and I can't even remember how it happened, I found this course that was around naturopathic nutrition, but it also incorporated the five element, the five season theory that I'd learned. So I was like, I saw it and I just signed up immediately. I didn't even know if I could make the dates because it wasn't an online course. It was a go and sit in the classroom at that time. But I was just going to do it and I was going to make it happen. And that opened my eyes again into, so I took in my foundation, if you like, of the five elements, the five season work, the energy work, the meridians, the acupuncture points. And then I went in and learned more about the body and how food affects the body in an energetic way, not in a vitamins and minerals way. Yes, I had to learn that as well. But to be honest, that's not the bit that interests me. The bit that interests me is the vibration of food, the energetics of food, you know, how we can eat food that creates a message in the body of hydration, or how we can absorb more fat by increasing the energy within the liver. You know, lots of, oh, it was like, oh, I was like in a little bit of heaven, really, thinking, oh, all this stuff to explore. So, you know, and I used to take it all home and talk to my husband about it. And, you know, we ate really healthily as a family. And yeah, it was all good. That was exciting. So I incorporated into my acupuncture practice doing more nutrition stuff. And I think what I found from doing that actually food stuff was much more of my passion than the acupuncture. And when I say the acupuncture, I mean literally the sticking in needles. Mm-hmm. The five element stuff, that has always stayed with me, if you like. So that was, we were pottering along doing that. And then biggest thing in my life, probably, is my husband was diagnosed pretty out the blue with stage 4 cancer, asbestos related, due to an exposure he'd had in his 20s. I think the boys were 6 and 9 at the time. So it was, yeah, pretty, we went into a pretty hideous phase, really. And yeah. I saw it as quite a challenge to, like, okay, I've learned all this stuff about healing and naturopathic nutrition, and actually I can really support him in this. Yeah. And who knows, miracles happen. And, you know, so we did all the things, and actually he died 1 year and a day after diagnosis. And my life sort of unraveled a bit after that. Well, over that year, really, over, because, you know, the boys were young.
Yeah.
You know, losing a parent when you're young is not great. You know, I was 43, I think, at the time. So I wasn't young, but far too young.
Yes. And
life unraveled a bit. So then he died, and I was just sort of left in a bit of a heap, really, because I didn't quite know. You know, I'd put all my work, I'd started doing a lot of teaching. Before he was diagnosed, I'd started to teach at the college I trained at. I started to teach nutrition, started to teach five elements. I was a tutor. And it felt like, you know, I was traveling around the country teaching at weekends. And basically, I had to sort of just put a full stop on everything, really. Yeah. I had to just go, do you know what? I need to stop for me. I need to stop for the boys. We just need to take a moment here.
Absolutely.
And pause and do our grieving, really, or start to do our grieving, because, you know, it goes on for a long time. And it's interesting, because him dying, I mean, obviously it's a huge thing, but when I look at my work journey, if you like, Andy was sort of a bit like my ballast, if you like. He kept me very steady, and he kept me very steady in terms of how I ate. And I think what I didn't quite realise until he wasn't there, because we were together probably 18 years, I think, is that how much he did offer that anchor, if you like. Because what happened after he died is I didn't have anybody. I was full of emotions that I couldn't deal with, full of stuff that I just wanted to dampen down, pretend it wasn't happening, trying to juggle both my boys, who reacted to it very, very differently. And, you know, I didn't have space. I didn't have space to engage with all those emotions. So what I did is I started eating.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking back prior to earlier on in my teens, my 20s, that was there as well. But I sort of, I was young and I was sporty and it never really had much of an impact. But here I was approaching perimenopause, stuffing my feelings down with chocolate, basically. People used to send me chocolate in the post. I used to hear the thud on the mat and I think, oh, that's so nice. I don't have to go to the shop. You know, and I would eat it, whole big bar a day.
Like so many of us do. We shove it, we eat our feelings, we shove it down. Like,
Totally.
And especially in a situation like that, I mean, I can't even imagine the dealing with all of that within your boys and yourself. And feeling a little, like if I eat the chocolate bar, so what? That's good, you know. Let's have it, you know. It makes you feel good. It probably in your mind made you feel good for that 10-15 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, it got me through the day. It got me through the evening. It got me, through lonely evenings. You know, it stuffed feelings down, so I didn't cry all the time in front of the boys, or it meant I could go to school plays and feel I could manage it. Does that make sense? Yeah. It just sort of, it took the edge off. So so that was, and that sort of started a cycle, I think, around eating that I became much more aware of, because by then I'd had all this training, I was much more aware of energetics. So that was when I was 44, but my next stage, if you like, didn't start till I was 54. So I had a good 10 years of this cycle of overeating, thinking I need to stop this, what's going on, maybe giving up sugar for a short while, you know, then it not working, not understanding why I was working, why it wasn't working, thinking I'm doing all the things, I'm intelligent, what's going on, boys are growing up, boys are being teenagers, all that sort of thing. And, you know, by that time I'd met my present partner. So I met him 6 years after Andy died. So things were sort of steady again, if you like. Mm-hmm. But very differently to my husband, my partner isn't really a food ballast. He's a let's join in with you and eat. So we sort of fell in love and ate as part of celebrating our love. Does that make sense? You know, when you're in love, you want to celebrate and you have food and you have special food and it's Friday night. You know, we didn't live together for years, you know, because I had the boys and we were happy like that. But it meant we saw each other at the weekends and it was special. It was date night and we could have ice cream and we could have chocolate and we can have this. And all that happened is I just felt myself, I'd gone through the menopause as well, so all that happened is I felt myself sort of getting bigger and bigger and more uncomfortable in my body, and my feet hurt, I had indigestion, I'd lie down at night and I'd have reflux, you know, because my bosoms would sort of ride up into my throat. It felt, you know, that horrible, uncomfortable feeling. And it's interesting because I had a whisper from spirit a couple of years before I gave up sugar. And I was part of a medicine wheel circle. And every year we used to meet regularly, but every year we used to go out on the land and for a couple of nights, sleep out and connect in with our teachers, guides. And I remember one, and I don't know, remember what year it was, but I remember really clearly getting this message. And at the time, it wasn't something that was on my agenda, so it sort of felt a bit random, if you like. And the message was, sugar dampens your flame.
Oh.
Sugar dampens your flame. And I remember going, you know, feeling slightly irritated about it because it wasn't something that I was ready to address or wanted to address. It was just really want to la, la, la.
So was there at that time, do you feel like maybe there was even like an argument within yourself as far as like, here you were, you knew all the things, you knew all the good things, but at the same time, you know, you didn't have the capacity going through the things you went through to put those in place. And so here you are probably, I mean, maybe even beating yourself up a bit going, I know I'm uncomfortable. I know my body's getting bigger than I want it to be, but give me that chocolate bar, like give it, like, let me, I need it, you know? And so, yeah, when spirit gives you this message, you're probably almost like, it's probably almost like someone, you know, saying to, you know, someone who smokes, you know, the children being like, why do you smoke, mom? Like, quit smoking, you know, it's not good for you. And here's, you know, beyond just somebody here on earth, like spirits literally like saying, hello, Carol, like, hello.
Yeah, sure. And it was like, I remember afterwards thinking, yeah, wow, that's a big insight about how I eat affects my energy, you know, and I was big into working with my energy, you know, and working with my energy, wanting to support other people to transform their energy. You know, it was an unpalatable message, if you like, you know, it was inconvenient. I didn't really want to know it. And it was probably a couple of years before I actually did anything about it. Mm-hmm. And again, it was one of those moments. And what happened, very interestingly, I am on, what's she called? Do you know the person? Money Boot Camp woman. What's she called?
Yeah, Denise Duffield Thomas.
Denise Duffield Thomas. I was on her email list and I don't always read her emails. I like her emails, but I don't always read them. And I got an email from her. Everybody got an email talking about this woman called Susan Pierce Thompson and this way of eating called Bright Line Eating.
Yeah, I got the same email. Yeah, I remember.
You got the same email. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she was saying, wow, I've just discovered this woman and I've tried this and it's quite amazing. And I just thought, oh my goodness. So I then went and feasted, if you like, on Susan Pierce Thompson and what she had to say about food addiction and particularly addiction to sugar and processed carbohydrates. And it was one of those moments, it was like, it felt like a gift from spirit in a way, because it was like every video I watched, I was like, yes, 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 that's me. Oh my goodness. And in that moment, I was able to see really clearly why I hadn't been able to, for all these years, to control my eating around sugar and processed carbohydrates. Because what somehow in my addicted brain I hadn't made the connection was, because if I'd thought about it in a logical way, it would have made sense. But you know, food is so much more complicated, isn't it, than just what you know. It's about what you feel. What I didn't realise, and previously when I tried to give up sugar before, I wouldn't have given up the processed carbohydrates. So I would give up the sugar. I'd be able to do it for 2 weeks. But after about 2 weeks, I'd start to then want to eat croissants, pita bread, bagels, all stuff that I generally didn't eat too much of. And then I would slowly come back round to sugar. Now, what I didn't realise is effectively I was getting my fix, my sugar fix, by eating flour products, by eating processed carbohydrates. So in that moment, that binge week of, you know, watching all Susan Pierce Thompson's videos, buying her book, I had my aha moment, and again, that juncture, and I just thought, okay. And I think also around that time, a friend of mine, a very lovely friend of mine, had gently nudged me as if to say, Carol. And she said, I can't remember how she said it, but it was very kind. I, you know, what is all that belly fat? She didn't say that, but that's what she was saying. Because I've always been, my natural shape is very hourglass. I'm not a, I wouldn't ever class myself as a slender person. It's just, I'm a curvaceous person. But I've always had a waist. I've never had belly fat. And here I was at 54 with, it felt like a cushion stuffed up my trousers, you know, and I'd never had that. And she was like, what is this about? Anyway, so is it around the same time? So then I was like, that's what I need to do. So 1st of May 2017, I stopped sugar and processed carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And it was, I remember getting to 7 days and feeling like a miracle had happened, because I'd managed to get to 7 days of not having any sugar or processed carbohydrates. I felt ropey, but I sort of felt triumphant. You know, I was like, wow. Wow, that's amazing. And then I think, was it at that point? I probably got maybe about 2 weeks in, and I thought, okay, no, I think I'd, I can't remember, either just before or at about 2 weeks in, I thought, I'm going to call on some online friends to support me. And I, so I set up a little group, a little Facebook group called My Sugar-Free Journey, which I then invited like a few, like five friends, and said, and they all said, yeah, I'll do that with you. I need to give up sugar. I want to do that. And yeah, that was the start of the group that I still have, that now has 2,500 people in.
I'm in it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're in
I'm
it.
I'm not at the level that you are, and but I do get the trickle down, and I do hear your messages. And so even, you know, on that level, like, I'm not all in, but I'm seeing it and I'm getting it. And yeah, so it's grown from five.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible. And that just to me shows the importance of the work that you're doing for people.
Yeah.
But go ahead. Yeah. You're now at, that's where you're at with your Sugar Freedom group. And you've expanded. Like, I mean, we're in some other Facebook groups together, and I can remember a few years ago, you know, putting in that, you know, you're starting your email list, or here's what I'm going to start putting out. And now you've got all these incredible things that, the recipes that you share, and the incorporating, you know, the, like you said, the earth and, you know, the seasons with it, and really, really flourishing in all the things. I feel like all the things that you have built on, and all, like you said, the threads that you have been weaving along with all of this, it's incredible.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the group started off as a support for me, a place of accountability where I could share, I'm struggling, I've done another day. Because to start with, I counted the first 100 days. I counted. That felt really important to me, and I needed to be able to do that. My partner's very supportive, but he wasn't doing it as well. And that's, you know, it's fine. It was my journey, but I needed somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, after about 18 months, it stopped being support for me, and it started being, I became the teacher, I became the inspirer. It sort of changed. And I thought, wow, this is something that's really important for people to know.
Yeah.
You know, and so many people come along and they said, oh, no, I'm not. It's sugar. It's chocolate. It's not processed carbohydrate. And I said, well, it might not be, but just know that it could be. And then people go, do you know what? I think it is as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's interesting because, you know, my approach is very different to Susan Pierce Thompson. She's out there doing her Bright Line Eating, which is very weighing and measuring and much more focus, whereas my focus is much more about finding your authentic voice around food, you know, lifting that sugar shroud so you can, you know, find, you know, what suits your body, what you want to eat. Because when we've got, you know, people talk about intuitive eating, it drives me crazy. I say, just eat what your body tells you. When you're addicted to sugar and flour, your body tells you to eat sugar and flour.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you have to break the habit and then you can grow into your intuitive, authentic way of eating.
Well, and one of the things that I think, you know, that has been trickling down to me from what you share with everyone and what you teach is that I don't do the cooking in our house for the most part. It's my husband. And he loves to feed people. He wants people to eat, everybody eat. He's happy when everybody's eating and he's happy when he's cooking and he cooks, you know, well, but what I notice for myself is, you know, we get up in the morning and we're, you know, getting started and he wants to get going on his day. So he's like, what would you like for breakfast? What can I make you for breakfast? Well, what I'm finding is that I'm not ready to eat yet and I'm not hungry yet. So like there's trying to find this balance of like, I think it comes down to we're so taught, at least here in America, like eat your meals, eat your three meals, breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, and I think for a lot of people too, rushing out the door to go to work, grab whatever, you know, this was me at least in my 20s for sure. And even when I had my kids, like you're getting the kids ready and off to school and, you know, what can you grab? What are you grabbing that's easy and fast to get out the door in the morning, or maybe even eating in the car as you're going driving to work or whatever? So I think it's so interesting what you know the way you model it and the way you teach it, and I love that you bring it in. You know, with you know, on like you said, you know, it's easy for people to say these, you know, the intuitive eating people to say eat what your body tells you to eat, and here you are addicted to sugar, so you're like, yeah, well, my body wants the carbs, of course it does, you know.
Yeah,
and I think for some people, I have a friend who is a horse trainer, and I remember when I first was around her, she really ate a lot of, she loved pasta and she loved breads, but here she is running around all day and riding horses and walking. And so she could burn it off. Like her body probably really could burn that off. Here we are, you know, for most of us, we're maybe not that active and it's not maybe so beneficial for us, you know?
Yeah, and totally.
And I think, you know, one of the things I know you talk about, like having the, you know, the snacks and the crackers and the chips and stuff. And here in America, chips are potato chips. And you do, I mean, I think a lot of us know that if you start to eat that one, you're not going to have one. You're going to have the whole bag. Next thing you know, you've eaten the whole bag. So I love what you do. And I love that you really go on a deeper level with it.
Yeah. I mean, I always say, one of my little phrases is sugar freedom doesn't necessarily mean sugar free. So again, and I just explain what I mean by that, because for me, sugar freedom means that I don't get triggered anymore by food. I know what my foods are that it's not good for me to be around or to eat. And I stay away from those, and everything else I can eat intuitively because my body will not get triggered by it and want to go into overeating.
Yeah.
So, for example, my first year, I was completely sugar and processed carbohydrate free because I almost wanted to just reroute, rebuild my brain, you know, in to know what it meant not to be continually triggered by those foods. And after about a year, I started to explore the edges of what those meant. So now I do sometimes have processed carbohydrates. So like I will have oat cakes, I have rye bread. I don't generally have wheat bread at all because I find that a bit triggering. I don't at all have chocolate because I know that's not good, but I can have like cacao or cocoa in stuff as long as there's no sugar in there. So the whole, that's why I call it in a way my sugar-free journey, because it's an exploration of your relationship with food. You know, people write to me all the time and say, what is the protocol? And I said, there is no protocol. It's not a diet. It's a way of exploring how you can have a healthy relationship with food. So I would say now that all the food I eat, I have a healthy relationship with food. But I know that also, if I started eating chocolate again, you know, those neural pathways in the brain, they haven't disappeared. They've almost just gone dormant. Mm-hmm. They could wake up at any time if I started eating chocolate. You know, I always say I'm a recovering sugar addict.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, any moment if I started eating too much of it, I'm not saying, I'm sure if I had one square of chocolate, I'm not going to be diving in. But if I had a whole bar, you know, I could easily start. What would happen is, as I've noticed with other things, it would be like, you know, I might have it, and then it would start to be in my brain. It would be like a little worm in your brain that starts to think, oh, I'm going down the shop now. Oh, I could see, or maybe I could just buy myself a little bar. You know, you start to have that food chatter in your head. Yeah. I don't have any food chatter about carrots. I don't have any food chatter about curry or food chatter about, you know, oat cakes or, you know, but it's this nuances like cheesy oat cakes. Yeah, I have food chatter about those. Ordinary oat cakes, no, I don't. And that's the exploration. So that's why I say sugar freedom isn't necessarily be about sugar free. It's finding, because the problem, you know, I don't think there's a problem with people eating a bit of sugar occasionally. You know, it's like occasionally. You're not going to get diabetes by having a bit of sugar occasionally. The problem is, it's when you can't just have it occasionally. And that was me. I couldn't just have it occasionally. It would literally take me over.
It's like that one square of chocolate, and next thing you know, you're in Willy Wonka's chocolate factory in the vat of chocolate, yeah. Drowning, you know, yeah. Literally drowning your body in the chocolate.
Yeah.
And
totally.
Yeah. And I think one of the challenges, at least, you know, I think a lot of people experience this challenge, is when you go to, like, we went, last weekend we were at a friend's house for dinner, and then, you know, you want to have the dessert and they're serving the dessert. And then, you know, what do you, you know, you're already full from dinner. And what do you do when, you know, oh, here's the yummy dessert that you're presented with, you know, and you're already, oh my goodness, I'm so full. So there are so many challenges in our lifestyles that come up. So
it's interesting. Do you know what? I remember this was one of those little moments I had, and it wasn't that long ago, actually, about that, you know, the dessert comes out and what do you do? I was meeting up with some old work colleagues who I probably hadn't seen for 10 years. This was just before the pandemic. So it wasn't that long ago. It's literally my last social event before lockdown happened. And I hadn't seen these people, and we were all going to bring food to share. I started getting myself in a tizzy because I hadn't seen them for a long time. They didn't know I was sugar-free. I thought, do I tell them? Oh, what do I do? I'd already decided they were going to have soup and somebody was making some homemade bread. So I thought, well, I'll have a slice of bread, because occasionally I do if it's in a, you know, it's bookended, if you like. It's fine. I wouldn't have it at home, but just out. Mm-hmm. And somebody was making a cheesecake. Anyway, I wound myself up a little bit about this, because do I make a statement? Do I say, I've been sugar free? You know, because it's quite a big thing when you do it. And what happened? It's so interesting. We all had our meal. We were chat, chat, chat. the cheesecake came out, and I said, and they said, do you want some? And I said, oh, no, actually, I'm full. And nobody blinked an eye. Everybody was far too interested in what was on their plate. And I thought, I didn't tell them I was sugar-free. I didn't tell them anything. I just said, no, thank you. And I thought, yeah, that's so interesting. That's my stuff. That's my stuff about food and eating. And, you know, I just said, I'm full. I've had enough. You know, looks lovely. No, thank you.
I love that. And, you know, one of this is actually food for me and people. I don't know what the right word is. People being interested in the food you're eating is a trigger for me, because when I was growing up, there's certain things that I don't like to eat, and they're common things that other people like. They're like condiments, ketchup, mayonnaise, mustard. I don't like them. And so, you know, you start to get labeled as a picky eater. Oh, she's a picky eater, you know, because I don't like those things on my hamburger or whatever. And, so there's I came to realize a few years ago that why is that a bad thing to be a picky eater? If you're a picky eater because you choose not to eat something that's bad for your body, that, you know, that isn't supporting your body in a positive way, like, you know, too much sugar, then, you know, but here we are, you know, society wise, or even, you know, there's times when we have the people over. And, you know, I love your experience where they were all too wrapped up in their own delicious cheesecake to worry about whether you were having a slice, more for them, maybe, you know, but here we are where people will, it happens all the time when, again, when my husband's cooking for people and we invite him over, sometimes people will be like, oh, well, you're not eating that, or, oh, you're not going to have any dessert. Because in my own home, I clearly feel comfortable to say, I'm going to pass on that. I'm full. Maybe I'll have something a little later, but usually, generally, a lot of times the I'm going to have something a little later means I'm not. It's just my way of, you know, getting by with the people that are in your home. And I think that's the hard part, is like, let's not worry about what the other, they're not living in your body, you know?
So
I love that. But you were, and the fact that we work ourselves up about it, you know, what am I going to say? What am I going to do? And I think a lot of different dietary modes, if you want to call it, have become much more accepted, you know. But I think maybe sugar, even though these other things, I think sugar is really a hard one for people to understand. Like, how are you not going to eat sugar? How are you not going to eat that delicious brownie or that, you know, whatever it is? And people, I also came to this realization a couple of years ago that people say, well, I'm going to treat myself. I'm going to get this. There's an ice cream store here in town. And on Sundays, you can get an ice cream sundae, medium for the price of a small. So I've had people and their smalls are not small, so that you can imagine the medium. And so I've had people say, oh, I'm going to go treat myself to that. And even people that I know are either borderline diabetic or diabetic will say, I'm going to go treat myself. And when you think about that, are you really treating your body to something that's not going to make it feel good? Is that a treat, you know, quote unquote? I love the idea that you really fully had like a year detox to really like have your brain like rewire on this. It's super interesting. Super interesting.
Yeah. It made a big difference. It did make a big difference. I just want to say one thing about being sugar-free often triggers other people. Mm-hmm. Because what it does is it flags up for them, I could never do that. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're all in it together and you're all eating your ice cream, you know, your treat, you know, size up on a Sunday, you're all eating it. But someone's saying, oh, no, I don't eat sugar or whatever. it like flags people up and they go, oh, I couldn't do that. Oh, I could never do that. And then, you know, I think it's often can be quite difficult to hold yourself in that space when you're triggering people, particularly, you know, food is so emotive, you know, like, you know, your husband's a feeder. There's so many people out there who are feeders, you know, that's part of how they show love. And it's, no, that's not a bad thing, but to be on the receiving end of that can be quite difficult if you're trying to change how you eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's, I just think, you know, that I love the affirmation, what anybody else thinks of me is none of my business. Right. You know, so if people think I'm strange that I don't eat sugar, you know, then carry on, fill your boots, you know, it's like, but this is my choice.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying I'm not eating vegetables. I'm saying I'm not eating something that's not good for my body.
Right. Right.
You know,
I love it. And I love this. I just love the journey that you took and you really had multiple, a funny thing happened on the way to my life. And yeah. I mean, it wasn't just one, some of them smaller, some of them clearly bigger. And this journey that you've taken and the journey that not only led you to support yourself, but, you know, in finding what works for you, you're able to really support people in such an incredible way. And like I said, like, I'm not full in on your, on all your stuff, but I get the pieces of it and I get the bits and it still helps me to support myself in small, even in maybe small ways, to go, oh, that's a good idea. Or see one of your recipes and go, ooh, I'd like to try that. You know, that sounds, one of the recipes that you recently shared was one of your berry jams with
jam, yeah.
Oh my goodness. Like, fabulous. You know, that's a fabulous idea. And super, it seems easy. I didn't make it, but easy, like, you know,
easy, yeah, really easy.
Which is important. You know, the easy is important. But I mean, I just love it. And I think it also goes to show how many, like, you don't realize how many people you might be touching.
I know.
Even though they're not fully immersed and maybe commenting on your stuff or maybe fully immersed in your program, you're still touching people and supporting them and they're getting it and their lives are being enhanced by what you're doing. And I think that's really what so many of us hope for, is to somehow change other people's lives as we go along on our journeys, you know? So,
Well, no, it's like, I do get messages and people say, you've changed my life. I didn't know that. And you've changed my life. And, you know, and that's somebody who may have never commented in the group. I haven't got a clue who they are. Mm-hmm. Might not even have liked a post, but they're there reading, absorbing it. Even just someone saying, you can feel addicted to sugar, is like, oh my goodness, you know, how amazing. You know, I'd never knew that, you know, because lots of people would say you can't be addicted to sugar. So no, I feel very, it's funny, you know, how I've ended up here. You know, my journey has always been to healing myself, I guess. And then in healing myself, I'm now able to support other people to heal themselves.
Well, and I there's something about, I think you could have just healed yourself and that would have been it, you know, and you could have gone about it and just kept it all to yourself and all the things that you learned. But in sharing it and in such a beautiful way and incorporating, like you said, incorporating all these threads of what you've learned and the cloth that you've woven and the funny thing happened on the way to my life path that you've experienced and all these things you took, you know, the things that you've grabbed along the way and brought with you, and so generously share with the world. I mean, it's incredible that you like I said, you could have just healed yourself and been happy enough to support yourself and your family, you know, and taught your boys and your partner, you know, these things, and then that'd be it. But, you know, I love that you're willing to, you know, to share that and the energy, I mean, your energy work, which is a huge part of this. I mean, it really is the basis for this, is the energy of your body and how different things, not only sugar, but the other things affect, you know, your body as well, your emotions and, you know, all these other things too. So I think this is a fabulous place to wrap up with your story. And but before we go, tell our listeners where the best place to find you on social media, on your website, all the things. We'll also put it in the show notes, but where can you be found?
So my group that I've been talking about is called My Sugar Free Journey, and that's in Facebook. So if you just put My Sugar Free Journey into the search bar, I'll come up there. My website is carolleenaturalhealth.com. And that's got a sort of a broader look at the work I do, plus my books, the children's books that I wrote. And then on Instagram, I'm sugar-free natural foodie. So those are all good starting points.
Yeah. And I had forgotten about your books, and I just want to mention those because I think those are really important as well. So the books that you wrote came from your experience with dealing with your grief from your husband's passing. So just talk about those for a minute.
Okay. I wrote, again, A Nudge from Spirit. I was maybe 4 years after my husband died. And I had a dream that I had to write a book to support children who around death and bereavement. And I had the words, and then I had the same dream the next night with more words. So then I literally just sat down and I wrote it. And I was involved with a charity at the time who had supported me and the boys. And I'd done some grief support worker training, again, as part of my own healing, really. And yeah, I wrote this book, and I ended up writing two books plus an activity booklet. So the first book is set called Saying Goodbye to Hair. The second book is called Remembering Hair. And then there's some activity sheets that go alongside the book. And the books are a story around illness, death, dying. But it's very, again, it's very linked to the nature and the natural world and the seasons and the changes within the seasons. And what makes it a bit different is in the back of the book, there's like guidance notes for the parents or carer, whoever is supporting the child through the process. So, you know, because it can be a bit of a touchy subject to bring up. People are sort of a bit wary of it, a bit scared of it. So, you know, it will say page 1 to 5 talks about blah, blah, blah. These are the pointers you can refer to in the pictures, you know. So,
yeah.
So, yes, it's, I mean, it's, this is, I mean, it's been, thousands of books have been sold to hospices and to parents all over the UK, probably abroad as well. I mean, I've now got the remaining stock, if you like, in my lounge because the publisher retired and wasn't able to find a new publisher, which is a shame, but I still have some books. In fact, I'm going to send out in the next week a palliative care nurse spoke to me, and I'm going to send her 40 books that they're giving out in the ward. So yeah, again, funny thing happened on the way to my life. I wrote two books. And you know what? It was the bizarre thing was, you know, when everything's lined up, I am aware, like I had this dream. I wrote it. I spoke to the woman at the charity and said, I'm going to write a book. I can give some money to the charity. And she sort of looked at me strangely, and I was like, she could see I was on the mission. And she said, well, you need to talk to Dadi Da, who was one of the trustees. He's a publisher. He'll be able to help you. Then Isaac, my youngest son's best friend in the village, who he was welded at the hips with at that point, his mum, amazing artist. I said, hey, Donna, would you consider? She said, absolutely, I'd love to do that. I mean, you've seen some pictures of the illustrations, absolutely out of this world. So it all just flowed. It all just flowed. There was a story. There was Donna doing the story. You know, she did all the organising of where it went on the page. She did all the beautiful pictures. The publisher took them on and published them. And it all went like that. Again, it came from spirit. That I always say, the second one was a bit like giving birth to a watermelon. But the first one was, it came from spirit. It just flowed. It was easy. It was emotional, but it was easy. It just went here and here and here and here. There's the story.
And I think that's one of the things, and one of the things that for me, and one of the reasons, you know, things that I think about with a funny thing happened on the way to my life is that's it. Where sometimes we just don't realize that these things that happen lead us in a direction that is just so aligned, that is just takes us. And I have seen photos. I haven't seen the book in person, but I have seen photos, and it is a gorgeous book. And it just the idea of it touches me, because I feel like it's just such a needed book in this world for people, you know, for children and the parents as well, to, you know, have an outlet for healing and working with their grief. So thank you for putting that work out into the world as well. So thank you so much, Carol, for joining us. And I thank you everyone who's watching or listening. A funny thing happened on the way to my life. And I hope everyone has a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life podcast. For more information, visit my website at www.lauramirhead.com.